speaking of jumping off of planes, and he's going to be getting on a plane very shortly. Hopefully he won't be jumping off, but he just he is fresh from a musky adventure himself. Him and his buddies were on the French River recently doing some musky hunting. I'm sure he was all ears listening to the tagging program in Lake St. Clair. His name is Chris King. Kinger is on the line with us. He is the former NHL hockey player and now senior vice president of hockey operations with the NHL. Good morning, Kinger. How are you, buddy?
Grange, good morning. How are you, my friend?
Good. Having some technical difficulties this morning. I'm sure you've had a few of those in your current life we'll call you a goal judge, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, don't be calling me a goal judge, and good God, don't be calling me an official. But I do have a great set of tools in the truck. I can probably help you out.
Yeah, you probably can, man. Before we get on to fishing, of course, this is the fresh start, the new season for you guys, just like it is for the hockey players. They have their camp, and I guess you guys are kind of doing the same thing, right?
Well, we are. There's lots to do at the start of the season. At the start of any regular season, you know, familiarize everybody with the rules, the different intricacies of things they can and can't do as far as rosters and things that, you know, you have to remind general managers and teams about as they prepare for the new season. But this summer, I mean, we had a lot to do. We talked earlier on one of our conversations a month or two ago about some of the issues that we were faced with in the playoff this past season that we had to address, and we have done that, and we've gotten the word out to all the parties that needed to be addressed, that being the players, the coaches, the general managers. We built some video to back up some of these new rules. We met with our counterparts in the media, whether it be our folks and friends at Rogers or NBC and some of our national networks and individual team networks. So everybody's aware of what's going to happen and what's going on, and hopefully it's a non-problem for us. But that was a big part of the last month was getting ourselves and everybody else ready for some new changes.
I love the new change in goal disputes. If you're wrong, you get a penalty. I love that.
Right. Well, it worked quite well to decrease a lot of the offside calls, you know, and sometimes or anytime you give a coach, and listen, these coaches are great. They find gray in every rule that we make, and we almost have to think ahead of them of what they might try to maneuver out of some of these new changes. But when you throw a penalty on a wrong challenge for offside, it forced them to be a little bit more exact and only challenge the plays that they knew they'd win. And with goalie interference, and again, it's a call on the ice that's a judgment call by the official, and of course comes to Toronto where we have our input and we decide, because we see them all, whether they are right in the original call or wrong, or if they were completely or if they weren't absolutely wrong is kind of the wording. It's a little more clear in the rule book, but then we stay with the original call, and they would get a freebie, and if they didn't like it, they would call it, they get a freebie, and they don't want to lose their time out. Well, now, as you say, they get a penalty, and think of in a game situation, you think your goalie's been fouled, you make that call, the referee in the video room don't think it constituted goalie interference, so now you're killing the penalty, and you could easily be scored on shorthanded, so it's a big swing, so you better be right.
Huge swing, and I think it's going to be part of the game now. I think it's part of the whole game strategy, because you make a bad call and you just cost your team a possible 2 points.
So yeah, absolutely. So the old idea that's coming into play was a couple plays in our game 3-4 years ago were plays that we watched the replays and everybody said, man, I wish we could have had one more look at this, and the referee could have one more look at this, and they would have changed their opinion. But it was for egregious plays in the game that you can't defend. And then when you wake up in the morning and you're watching highlights going, how could they allow that to happen? Well, that's where this kind of started. And it became more than that. As I said, coaches found ways of trying to manipulate the rule and challenging little bumps or little plays in a game that 5 years ago you'd never even question. So we had to kind of you know, dig down on that and adding a penalty to it, which was the general manager's ideas and approved by the players in the competition committee and the owners, to be more strict with the penalty was something they felt would get us back to what this was all about and getting rid of those plays that embarrassed the game. And we'll see how it happens. And that's going to have to be a lot more exact when they make this call.
I think it's great. I applaud whoever came up with that. I think it's a fantastic ruling.
That was my idea.
Oh, well, there you go. See, I knew it was your idea. Deep down inside.
Yeah, I'm not claiming that one, but.
Before we get into fishing, Kinger, what was your opinion on what was happening with free agency this year, which is kind of totally right off the table? It was insane. Now it seems like everybody's sort of getting back in order, but for a while there, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, when you talk about unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents, and restricted free agents are obviously those players that finish their contract, but under the rules with the collective bargaining, don't have the right to go and talk with teams freely to make those right moves, and still have the team still owns their rights. It gives the player obviously some leverage, but it also allows the teams to keep an asset that they've worked hard to develop. Of course, they've drafted them and they've had them in their system and they've been in their lineup and they've been big parts of it. And the group of young guys that were sitting not signed, were mostly restricted free agents. And you have to work the marketplace. And of course, I think what happened, Ange, is this group of players, and when you look at them, they were very similar in how valuable they were to their team and where they fit within their team structure. So you have to be careful to make sure that player A is comfortable and happy with the contract that they're getting, but also equally compensated and fit within the structure of your team. And of course, in the salary cap system, you only have so much money to give to
That's
22 players, and you have to be able to, get your best players in the lineup, but also get your third and fourth line pluggers that complement your team. And again, we saw in the final, St. Louis's third and fourth line were as big a part as their first and second line and helped them win a cup. So those guys are just important. So you have to general managers earn their money in the summer, and they were all waiting to see what the other guy was going to get, and once some of them started to sign, the domino effect happened, which we thought it would, and players are in camp and ready
off
to go.
Go.
It's good for the game. It's good for the fans.
Sit tight with me, if you could, my friend. I want to talk to you about your fishing adventures as well, but we got to take a quick break. On the line with us is Chris King, Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations with the NHL. More Journal after this. Don't you dare go away.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows. The whistle blows.
Welcome back to the program. I love that song.
Oh, me too.
God bless him. Stompin' Tom. He became, that song became, to me anyways, growing up in the hockey world, I loved hockey. That was a staple, as it is, I'm sure, for a lot of Canadians across this country. And they also will recognize a gentleman on the line with us who played 14 seasons. I didn't realize his career was that long, but 14 seasons in the NHL for Detroit Red Wings, New York Rangers, Winnipeg Jets, Phoenix Coyotes, Toronto Maple Leafs, yay! And the Blackhawks, his name is Chris King, and now he is the vice president, senior vice president of hockey operations with the NHL. All right, Kinger, we got to talk fishing, man. You were just on the French River. You know that's a place that's near and dear to my heart, as it is yours. I spent a lot of time there. How was this trip for you? You there, Kinger?
Fishing
club. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Hello.
Yep, there you are. I think we got you now. How was it?
Yeah, you know, it was great. It was kind of you learned a lot of our Muskoka Anglers members when we were up there last year. And
yep.
When you're up there shooting with your grandson. And we certainly love going up there. And we were just having, a quick little trip last year. But this year we kind of talked to the club at our meetings we have every month. And we wanted to go and do a little destination end of the season wrap up. And
we had 10 guys going, and then it was 8, and then, of course, in the end it was 6, but the 6 hardcore anglers stayed at our good friend Steve's cottage, we did some fishing, and we had 2 guys that were musky crazy and did nothing but, and Andrew and I, as you met Andrew on a few occasions, we kind of fished everything and caught some real nice bass and caught some nice pike. The weather wasn't on our side to get out to the big lake where we wanted to and do the stuff we wanted to, but 3.5 days, four days on the French up there was just a great way for me to end my fishing season and start the hockey season. Saw the biggest muskie I've ever seen. I thought there was a sports pal canoe sunk right under the front of our boat, but he fooled around with us for a while. But one of the craziest things I've ever seen, Ange, we were fishing and we were close to shore. We turned around, we both looked, and we saw this muskie breach and jumped. You know, I say yes, we saw the entire length of fish, and there was a good foot and a half of water between his tail and the water, and then he went right back down, and I've never seen that before, and my goodness, it was a tank. And it kept us busy for a couple hours, and I just don't know what he was doing, whether he was chasing bait or whether he was just saying, here's a couple goofs that I'm going to kind of get a little frustrated, and whatever he was doing, it worked, but it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Having been on the receiving end of that experience on numerous occasions, but one that comes to mind was also in that same area on the French. Actually, it was on the lake just at the mouth of the French. Same experience. And you wonder, is the fish coming up for a peak and to see what's going on out there? Because nothing else makes sense. It's not a feeding thing for sure. And nothing else makes sense other than wanting to come up and say hello and impress the hell out of you with a size. And it scares the hell out of you for if you're not expecting something like that, for sure.
Yeah, man, it was cool. And that, you know, I mean, I've seen some fish on that body of water, as you have too, and it's kind of cool when they come up and say hello. You'd love to be able to have a little picture with them, but you know what? Sometimes you don't have to catch all the time to have a great time fishing, This was one of those times where we actually got a chance to watch this thing follow our baits and come up. And again, I don't think I've ever seen a muskie that big before. And I certainly haven't been on the water and some of the waters that you've been, but this thing was well over 50 inches. And if it wasn't 40 pounds, it was 50. It was just unbelievable. It'll keep me coming back for more, Ange, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the key to fishing, right? Those moments just keep you coming back for more and more. Even if deep down inside you know you're never going to make contact with that fish, the fact that it's there and you saw it, that's all you need, right?
Yeah. So, being said, I wouldn't mind my picture with one of them. And I mean, I'm a good guy. I'd put it right back, right?
Sure. For sure. Is it a coincidence? I say not, but it seems to me like most hockey players love the outdoors and love fishing.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence. I would say, you know, just from my own research of one, 80, maybe 90% of hockey players spend the summer, at least a part of the summer, either fishing or hunting or something in the outdoors. And it's fantastic.
Well, I think we all do it for different reasons. I mean, I grew up in Horn Pain in Northern Ontario, so I was in a fishing boat before I probably could walk. But I think what our game and a lot of sportsmen's game is it's you know, eight months, hopefully 9 months. That means you're playing lots of deep games in the playoffs that are at high pressure, high intensity, team oriented stuff. And in the summertime, you know, you want to get right away from that. And you need that time and that downtime to kind of recharge the batteries. And no different than me as an executive now, where you're in the room every night watching games, making calls. And, you know, Paul and I love to get to Muskoka, and she loves working on her property, and I love getting in my boat and just, you know, not talking to anybody or not thinking about too much. You know, the phone goes on silent, and you just kind of buzz around on your trolling motor, and whether you catch them or not, it's irrelevant. You need that time to just get away, and I think that's what a lot of even our current players do. And you know, still a lot of our players come from Canada and small town Canada, and that's what they've grown up doing and watching their parents do and their dads, and have done it with them. So that doesn't get too far away from routine, and it's a solid way to just relax.
And it's a way to get away from the pressures that you guys face as professional athletes. I had an interesting analogy given to me recently by my cardiologist when we were dealing with the word stress, right? Because that's obviously one of the big factors in folks who have heart attacks. And as he was describing the word stress to me, he said something, and I think I mentioned it here on the program a couple of weeks ago. He said stress has never killed anybody. Stress has never caused a heart attack in any individual, he said. Stress does not do that. It's what you do with stress that leads right to those complications. And then he cited hockey players. He says, think about it. He says, if stress caused heart attacks, every single hockey player would have heart problems because right they're under stress constantly.
Right.
And it really opened my eyes to the whole stress thing. And that probably has a lot to do with why you guys spend so much time in a theater like the outdoors where you have a chance right to de-stress, right? So it,
well,
it makes sense.
I mean, look how lucky we are. I mean, you know, I'm standing on my balcony in Toronto overlooking the city north here, but an hour and 45 minutes, I can be in my truck and on the beautiful Muskoka Lakes, and another hour and a half, I can be up in the French River, and you wouldn't know that you're 4 hours from Toronto. I mean, we're so lucky in Ontario and in Canada, for that matter, to be able to share that still. That's something that keeps us here. So
good stuff, man. And we're glad you're here with us. Hey, by the way, you're heading for Europe today?
For 6 o'clock, Air Canada on our way to Geneva. We have a game Monday. The Flyers are playing a club team from Switzerland in Lausanne, and the Hawks are already in Berlin, and they play a club team from Berlin tomorrow. And then both teams, the Flyers and the Hawks, meet in Prague for a game Friday to kick off their regular season. So we have a regular season game in Prague. Last year we were in Helsinki, and we were also in Gothenburg. So we have lots of fans. It's a worldwide game, as you well know. Our players come from everywhere, and we're taking our game to those fans in market. And they're very
nice,
successful. You can't get a ticket because we're over there, and they are league games. We're making the calls and making the decisions that are important, no different if they were in Toronto, Montreal, Columbus, Dallas, wherever.
Nice.
So we need to be on site to get that done, and, you know, poor me has to go do it.
Ah, that's tough. I feel so bad for you. Coming from the French River a few weeks ago, now you're heading to Europe. I
mean,
unbelievable. Eh? The guy's a trooper. You got to admit.
Well, and in all honesty, the guys are fishing Parry Sound tomorrow, and I probably wouldn't have minded to fly out on Monday and get that one in. So the tanks will be coming into the shoals there now, and I'm going to miss it. But I'll get them when I get back.
And, you know, coming from you, I believe it 100%. I know you well enough to know you'd rather be there. I understand it wholeheartedly, my friend. Listen.
Oh, well, whatever.
Always a pleasure having you on the program. Great to share moments with you. Hopefully we'll do a few more out in the field.
Sounds good, my friend. I'm glad you're feeling good. And anytime you need to talk to me, give me a shout.
Travel safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Chris
Dan.
King. Thank you. Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations with the NHL, off to Europe to be part of the ambassadorship, I'm sure, program that the NHL is putting on with people on the other side of the pond to sell the game.